Gerard Gallant is the third coaching change made in this division this year. He is out as head coach of the Vegas Golden Knights. Your reaction to Gallant being replaced by Peter DeBoer?
Well, Pat, I mean, I'd be lying if I said I wasn't the least bit surprised. But I will say that when I, you know, after watching the game last night and reading the comments from Mark Stone post-game where he talked about we should not be losing to the Buffalo Sabres. We are a better team than that. I definitely got, you know, a greater sense of frustration that was going through that locker room. And to see the way that this team has lost of late, you know, it had to be concerning. But at the end of the day, you know, Gerard Gallant's record has been most impressive, you know, in his 2+ season in Vegas. And I mean, really, when you look at that roster and how everybody has underperformed, and I know Marc-Andre Fleury, you know, addressed and apologized for the way he has played. But, yeah, I mean, you know, look, Fleury's save percentage is as low as it's been in his three seasons in Vegas. And it's as low as it's been. You have to go back to what I think his last season in Pittsburgh was the last time he didn't have a save percentage over 910. So, you know, as they say, you know, show me a bad goalie and, you know, I'm going to show you a coach that's doing a bad job. And, mm-hmm. you know, and Malcolm Subban, again, you know, he's below 900 as well. So, you know, everything for them has been on the back end. Even when they had the success in year one, I think a lot of us said in the business that this team does not have a Norris Trophy defenseman. And they still don't have a Norris Trophy defenseman. And they're not getting stellar goaltending. And right now the coach is paying for it. But Pat, I don't know where you come from on it. I firmly believe that this was a move that Bill Foley initiated, and he is 70-plus years old, and I think, you know, he would like to see a Stanley Cup before his days are done, and I really think he pushed Kelly McCrimmon and George McPhee to make this move.
Interesting. So that you think there was some pressure from above and that this wasn't necessarily the way that they were leaning towards, hey?
I don't. I really don't. And in texting with some people back and forth today, you know, I get the sense that I'm not alone in this thought process. Because, you know, look, you've got the All-Star break coming up. You've got a chance to reset. They're 3 points out of, what, first in the Pacific Division. And granted, you know, the feeling is that this team should be better than it is. I mean, I've felt for a while that, you know, they've got the most talent, but you know, when you look at the struggles of the guys in the back end, and let's look at, you know, you look at the back end and Schmidt, it's Derek Englund who is aging rapidly, and Nick Holden and John Merrill, and Shea Theodore is having a really good year. But, you know, Nate Schmidt was really the backbone of this blue line, and it's not been a great year for Nate Schmidt. And William Karlsson is what? He's at 10 goals this year. You know, that's a guy, again, you go back to year one, it was 40 goals, and last year he didn't match those numbers, and he's not going to match them again unless he has one heck of a second half. There's a lot of reasons to point to it. It's easy to fire the coach, but I really don't think this is a move. And even when you listen to the comments from Kelly McCrimmon today, I'm just not sold that this is the move that was initiated by Kelly and George McPhee.
Yeah, that's really interesting. The other fascinating part of this is Peter DeBoer is the guy who comes in to replace him, a guy that knows the Vegas Golden Knights very well. What do you make of DeBoer as the replacement for Gerard Gallant?
Well, I think that's kind of part two of why this move was made. I think because you had a coach of the caliber of Pete DeBoer available, you know, it made the move a lot easier. You're going to see, I think, a different style of play, I would expect from the Vegas Golden Knights under Pete DeBoer. It's a little bit of different philosophy where, you know, under Pete DeBoer, there was never a shot that the Sharks took that was ever a bad shot. I mean, they took shots from everywhere. And I think you're going to see, you know, maybe a little more traffic to the net, maybe a little more defensive structure with Pete DeBoer. I think he's going to change some things up. A guy that, you know, look, he had a lot of success in San Jose, never obviously didn't win a cup, got this team to a final. So, look, it's not that they made a bad move by hiring Pete DeBoer, and maybe that, you know, this team needs some sort of injection. I mean, we've talked about the fact that because of where they are, how they're up against the cap, they can't really make a move until, you know, maybe a day before or 2 days before the deadline. They've really got to do it from within.
Their struggles, you talked about kind of what we've seen of late from Las Vegas. They've lost the four straight. They're not getting anything from William Karlsson. Like, tell us a little bit more about the way this team's been playing of late.
Well, Pat, I think, you know, prior to the loss in Buffalo last night, I mean, they trailed, you know, the three previous games, they trailed by at least 3-0. They were down, 4-0 to L.A. in the first period before making it close and eventually losing 5-2. They were down 3-0 to Pittsburgh before losing 4-3. They lost 3-0 to Columbus. And again, all three of these games are on home ice. I mean, you know, look, the one thing is if you're going to lose, don't lose in front of the home crowd. Mm-hmm. And they've had some really ugly losses in front of the home crowd. And even, you know, you go back to 2 weeks ago against St. Louis, they were down 3-0 in that game before storming back, jumped ahead 4-3, got tied up late at 4, and then won it in overtime 5-4. But, you know, there have been a lot of flaws with this Golden Knights team of late. And, you know, I understand the concern. They have struggled defensively, but that's really a product of that roster, and that's not the roster that, you know, Girard was given. I mean, the guys play so hard for him. In being around this team, you never get the sense that, you know, that there's an issue with player and players and coach. And then you look at, you know, the guys they brought in, and Max Pacioretty and Mark Stone are both having really good years offensively. Pacioretty's going to put up likely career high numbers. You know, they were, you know, gone through some tough times with Jonathan Marchessault being out of the lineup. I believe he did come back last night. But, you know, they're, again, for them, goaltending and defense have been an issue. And I think that that's not, I don't think, anything to do with Girard. I think it's more just a lack of, you know, of ability. And so now they're going to have to change the way they play. And I guess that's something that Pete DeBoer will focus on.
Our Pacific Division insider, Jonathan Davis, is with us from NHL Network Radio. He joins us every Wednesday on the Sports Drive at 5. It's funny, Vegas currently sitting number 5 in the Pacific Division, but just 3 back of number 1. It's as close as we've ever seen it, John. Yeah. 3 points separating 5 teams.
No, and that's why, you know, look, I guess, you know, and maybe in what Vegas is looking at is that they're seeing this tailspin, and they just, you know, they're trying to stop the bleeding. But it is really close, and every game means so much. And, you know, we're seeing, you know, Arizona has started to turn things around of late. The big thing for Arizona lately is one, Taylor Hall has caught fire, and the Coyotes are winning on home ice. But I still, you know, I still think that when you look at this division, I still think, you know, Vegas still has a lot to offer, and your team in Calgary is great listening to you guys day in and day out. You guys must be pulling your hair out at times in watching the Flames.
Yeah, it's been a frustrating year. It's been a very inconsistent year for this group. I'm curious to get your reaction on this one because you know the Pacific Division as well as you do. David Rittich is now the fourth goalie that's been named an All-Star. Two of them can't go, Kemper and Fleury. Jacob Markstrom gets named as Fleury's replacement, and today David Rittich gets named as Kemper's replacement. Your thought on David Rittich being an NHL All-Star this year?
Well, I mean, the first half was really good for David Rittich, and I thought, you know, even in the Montreal game, I mean, that game could have been over in the first period if it wasn't for the play of David Rittich. You know, the time off that he had, you know, he obviously used it very well. So, you know, look, it's kind of there are more deserving goalies, but because of injury, you know, he gets the call. But I think that, you know, what I've seen from David Rittich is not much different than I think what we saw even through parts of last year where, you know, he had some really good moments. I think that maybe he's been a little bit overworked. A lot of that due to just his really good play and maybe not as much trust early on in Cam Talbot. But, you know, obviously with what Talbot got three consecutive starts, if I remember correctly, looked
yep.
really good. So that's going to benefit, you know, both goalies. And I think, you know, when you look at the way David played against Montreal, that's got to be a very encouraging sign to the Flames team, even though it was a loss. I mean, Pat, you obviously watched that game quite close. I think the shots at one point were 12-2 in the favor of the Canadians, and they had a lot of high-quality scoring chances.
Oh, yeah.
David played really well.
Yeah, Riddick was the only guy who came to play on Monday.
Yeah.
He was very good against the Habs. I do got to get your thoughts from afar on Matthew Tkachuk, Zach Cassian, and all of what has gone down since that Battle of Alberta on Saturday night.
Something happened between those two? Is there something going on?
Apparently there is a couple things that happened, yeah.
Well, look, I'm on the side that Matthew Tkachuk should have dropped the mitt. And I think that I just don't like the guy running around and delivering the types of hits that he did. Clean, you know, legal by the rules. I just felt that, you know, you got to answer the bell. You can't run around like that and then turtle. So, you know, I would love to have Matthew Tkachuk on my team any day. I just wish that he would have dealt with it then and there, and it could have been over with. So, look, like everybody else in the hockey world, I can't wait for January 29th and February 1st. It's going to be must-see TV. I hope that, you know, the two of them just kind of settle it in the first period. You know, kind of like, I guess, reminiscent for me, the closest thing would be was after the Tkachuk elbow on Doughty. I think it was Kyle Clifford that,
yep.
that dropped the mitts with Tkachuk, and it was over. And, you know, look, there's still a feud, but it was over. I mean, you know, it was dealt with. And I think that's all, you know, we just need to have some closure on it. I just think that, because I think that Matthew's going to get his comeuppance from players around the league if he doesn't answer the bell. Someone's going to take a cheap shot.
Do you think he will, quote-unquote, answer the bell in one of these next two games?
I hope he does. I hope he does. It will tell me a lot more about him if he does as opposed to not doing it. I just think that he should be fighting his own battles. And the one thing, Pat, that I found kind of interesting and maybe disappointing in some ways is I didn't see a lot of Flames players rushing to Matthew's defense when he was getting ragdolled. That's just something that was just kind of surprising to me as I watched that situation unfold.
I know that you're not the only one that's brought that up before. I get it, but I also have gone back and I've watched it many times by now. It's such a strange situation, and one guy, Lindholm, was right there, but he's kind of pulled aside, and then by the time I think you would have had a chance for somebody to jump in, the officials do get in there in enough time. So I didn't read it the same way, but that's just me. I know that you're not the only one who has brought that up, JD. Like, it's not like you're on an island on that one.
Yeah, it was just interesting, and I thought that the refs kind of let it go a little longer than maybe I thought they would have as well. So, I you know, maybe, again, you know, maybe I'm reading too deep. Who knows? Maybe, you know, maybe it really isn't that big a deal. As you said, there may not have been the time, and Elias Lindholm's not going to be the guy that's going to jump in and try to pull Zach Cassian away. But that's why I say let's just hope that when they meet on January 29th that it just gets dealt with between the two of them, and then, you know, move on and have some great, you know, hard hits against each other. I just didn't like those type of hits, even though they're within the rules of the game.
Right. With Jonathan Davis, our Pacific Division insider, he joins us Wednesdays. Speaking of the Edmonton Oilers, Mike Smith really had some struggles there through December, but looks like Smith has gotten his game back on track.
He has. I mean, you know, the numbers tell you he's, what, 4-0-1 in his last five? He went through a stretch where he was looking, you know, more like a 40-year-old goaltender than, you know, than the goalie he is right now. But I think, you know, Pat, you know, we've seen Mike Smith over the years. He will have those stretches where he looks like an elite goaltender, and then he'll just fall off the map. And I just think that, you know, age plays into it. And So if you manage his time appropriately, you know, load management would be something that Mike Smith could really use to make him a more effective goaltender.
And Kyler Yamamoto has made quite the difference in Edmonton.
He has. Again, you know, it's given them a lot more balance on that second line. And maybe he's not tearing it up goal-wise yet, and he's not. But he's really made that line a much stronger line playing, you know, with Leon Draisaitl. And he doesn't look out of place. And he's a guy that you know, retrieves pucks really well and keeps plays alive. So, look, Edmonton needs anything to, you know, to balance things out on those, you know, definitely on those top two lines, so that Leon and Connor don't have to play together and really make it a one-line team. So, yeah, the recall of Kyler Yamamoto, it's worked out really well for the Oilers. And, you know, I'm still not sold on this team, but, wow, if they can find a way to get themselves into the playoffs and you've got, you know, Connor and Leon, it's not a bad two guys to take your chances on in any seven-game series.
Number one in the Pacific Division right now would be the Arizona Coyotes. They're starting to get a whole lot more out of Taylor Hall. He's really starting to feel a whole lot more comfortable in Arizona, isn't he?
Yeah, sort of. I think it's 13 points in 14 games. And, you know, the numbers will tell you that, you know, they're scoring almost half a goal more since Taylor Hall was acquired. So, you know, that's the impact that he has had on this team. And, you know, last night it was two goals and an assist, and Phil Kessel had two goals and an assist last night. And, you know, those are the two guys that they need to really help carry this team. I still think at the end of the day, Pat, I still think that they're a team that's built for the regular season and not for the playoffs. I really think they need to get more size on this team. I think that they'll get worn down, you know, through multiple seven-game series.
Possibility that this team does not have an all-star representative?
It is. You know, John Chyka is working it because Darcy Kemper, you know, they want him to have the rest, and he skated, you know, he is back skating, but they don't want to push anything. They want him ready for the second half of the season. And it's not like Aiden Hill, you know, obviously David Rittich got the call. So they're trying to find a way to get them a representative. But, you know, look, the rules clearly state that you must have a player selected from every team, but not necessarily have someone represent you at the game if injuries become a factor.
Right, which would they would have absolutely met that criteria by naming Darcy Kemper an all-star initially. Finally, in Los Angeles, what's happening with the Kings right now? What are you seeing from them as they've lost five of their last six?
Well, I mean, they've definitely been, you know, they're competitive. You know, they definitely don't make life easy for their opponents. They lost 2-0 in Carolina over the weekend. They were the better team in that game. But goal scoring has been, you know, a big issue for this team, you know, all season long and really for a couple of seasons now. And then last night, you know, they found a way to score three on Tampa, but gave up a late goal with Vasilevskiy pulled, and they lose in a shootout. You know, they're just a team right now that's, you know, they don't cheat you on effort. They just don't have the skill. And so, you know, they've got two games before having 10 days off. I think it's Florida and Philadelphia, games on the road for them. And then, you know, we'll see what Rob Blake can do. I mean, Tyler Toffoli is doing a really good job of making himself a marketable player again for them to move. I will say, though, Pat, is that if they're not able to get at least a second-round draft pick for Tyler Toffoli, then I think they should, but if they weren't, I would think that Rob Blake would try to sign him to a small deal. You know, he would try to get him signed for 2 years and under $6 million. They want to move Alec Martinez. There's no question. And there are a lot of teams that need blue liners. You know, the Toronto Maple Leafs obviously come, you know, first and foremost to mind. Winnipeg would be another team that could use help. So those are two of their more marketable guys. You know, Trevor Lewis, Kyle Clifford continue to be names that are out there. I don't think that, you know, that those two guys will really fetch a lot, because I think that you could find better players that can fill the role of both those guys. And if you're bringing in Kyle Clifford to fight, I just don't think that that's really the best thing that you, you know, for him to do, because in L.A., well, he does do the fighting in L.A., he doesn't have to do much of it. And
right.
I don't really see him, you know, he doesn't kill penalties. I just don't know what the role would be. But those are guys that, you know, are on expiring contracts.